In this episode, I chat with Verity Crawley about her recent success, along with aspects of her mental game and some travel tips. All this and more on The Bowler's Mind. Hi, Verity. Welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So before we talk about your most recent championship, kind of wanted to go back to the beginning of the season. Obviously, not the start you'd hope for. So I wonder if you could kind of walk us through what you were experiencing and also kind of what you learned through that experience and what helped kind of right the ship.
Yeah, it was definitely rough. I started the first event okay. Definitely wasn't as great as I wanted to perform. But you're always going to put expectations on yourself. And sometimes those expectations become a little bit, not necessarily too high, but too much in your mind. So after the first event, I evaluated how everything went. And I was pretty positive going into the next event. And then I bowled awful. It was just one of those things where I just couldn't figure out the lanes. I couldn't figure out what to do. I was watching and searching so much. I feel like I tried everything, which from an evaluation standpoint was great, because I'm like, I literally did all I could. I walked around, I watched players bowl. I stayed after I didn't make the cut to try and like figure out what I should have been doing. But it was just one of those things to where you then beat yourself up, right? It's very easy after a bad performance to think negatively. And as much as I try and evaluate the good and try and find the good in everything, it's sometimes it's there, but it's also the bad's always there, right? So I shake it off. And then my next event was USBC Queens. And I feel like, and I've probably never really admitted this, but I think I had a very bad mindset from the beginning, as soon as I saw the pattern. And I always look at the pattern and we get to practice on it. So I get to kind of think, okay, where do I want to play? What balls do I want to throw? But my biggest issue was that it was basically the same as the USBC Masters pattern. And I bowled the USBC Masters this year. And it's the first year I've ever bowled it. And I didn't bowl very well, right? I missed the cut. And I struggled on that pattern. So as soon as I saw the Queen's pattern, instead of being like, oh, this is great, I've already bowled on it, I've had an opportunity to learn, I know what I should be doing, I more so had the mindset of, oh, got a bowl on it again. And I think that kind of set the scene for the whole event. And as much as I don't want to admit that, because I know that I should have learned from the Masters and it should have really helped me, I think that was too much in the back of my mind, in all fairness. And I think as I was bowling, I was comparing what I was doing at Queen's to how I bowled at the Masters. But it was a different bowling center and it was a different pattern. Of course, there were similarities, but it still wasn't the same. And I think I was a little bit too much in my head about that. I had a decent amount of negative thoughts whilst I was bowling that event. And I've worked a lot with a sports psychologist over the last couple of years to figure out for me, what do I need to do when I'm being very negative? And I actually felt at Queen's for my first couple of blocks, I was okay. You know, I was frustrated, of course, with how I bowled, but I felt like I handled myself in a very good way. And I was so sure that I was going to have this huge comeback. And that's probably one of the greatest feelings, was that I genuinely felt like I could still make that cut. I felt like I had a possibility of going 200 over or whatever it was that I needed to make that cut. And that confidence is great, because there's been times where I certainly haven't had that. But at the same time, I mean, I didn't do it, right? I just could never quite figure out the lanes. And it was extremely frustrating. And it kind of put me in a mindset of, what am I doing? You know, as much as I feel like I belong out there on the PWBA tour, I just had three events at the start of the season that really weren't very good. And I'm questioning, you know, what am I doing? Am I doing the right thing? I'm not making the right ball choices. I'm not seeing the lane correctly. And it makes me start to question, like, well, why have I spent all of this time in practice trying to figure everything out? And yeah, it was a little bit of a rough start.
Would you say that in those situations of adversity, do you feel like coming away from that, did you grow more through the adversity or did you grow more through your championship?
I think, and everyone will always say this, it's always the adversity that you learn more from, right? I came back and I won. And of course, you still learn from those wins. But perhaps if I hadn't have had those first three events, then I wouldn't have been able to come back and win the next one. So I do think that you do learn so much more from the struggle. You know, I learn about, for me, the biggest thing that I learned from those first three events was my decision making. It's been something that I've worked a lot in practice, but in practice, I tend to be very technical and I tend to overanalyze. And I found that I actually brought that with me on the PWA tour for those first three events a little bit too much. I'm trying to outsmart myself for no reason. I'm trying to make moves way ahead of time. And I'm searching so much for this perfect ball motion that really didn't exist. And it wasn't until I sat down actually with my coach in England during a small break that we had from the USBC Queens to the next event that I realized, Verity, what are you doing? Like, I'm spending way too much time trying to figure out at what point is my ball reading. Just too many technical elements that for some people maybe they're great, but for me in those moments was I was just complicating things. And that was one thing going into the Michigan events that I said, like, Verity, okay, let's keep it simple.
That seems to be an aspect of bowling and maybe other sports too, but that when you get into situations and you try to outsmart it and you try to get ahead of things or you try to overthink things, it really actually hurts you worse than it helps.
Yeah, there's such a fine line between it, because in bowling, everything is a guess, right? It's an educated guess. There is no real answer of what to do. Do I move two boards? Do I move three boards? You could probably move both and still be okay. But now I have to guess, which one do I want to move? So it's all about putting education behind that guess. And that's why it's so important to spend the time in practice to figure it out. Like, I need to know the differences between my bowling balls so that when I get in certain environments, I know, okay, do I need the higher RG ball or do I need the lower RG ball based off the knowledge that I have? And it's just very hard then to find that fine line between, hey, now I'm going to outsmart myself and I'm going to try and think three steps into the future versus just truly being in the present moment and trying to just let the subconscious take over and making those simple decisions.
Let's go now to talk about the championship. What was it like winning that second PWA title? Well, let me ask you this first. When did you know you had it?
I don't know.
When did you believe you had it?
I believed I had it the morning of the second day, which is crazy to say, right? Because I remember texting my friend that morning and I said, I'm going to wear my blue jersey because that's the one I want to hold the trophy with. And that's a confidence that I never really used to have prior to winning my first title. I never saw myself winning. I saw myself making shows, but I 100% knew that I was going to finish second. And funnily enough, that's what started to happen. And that's where the mind becomes super powerful. And you can go more and more into the mental game to understand why that happens. And part of me felt like that was what happened that day. You know, I believed that I was going to win. I put that jersey on because that was the jersey that I wanted to wear whilst I was holding the trophy. And again, it doesn't always go that way, right? But that confidence can really help. I make the show, and the first game that I bowl, it was far from secure that I was going to win. It came down to the 10th frame. And as much as I wanted to say, yeah, 100%, I'd got it, I knew that anything can happen, right? I can't control whether I strike or not. So the strike that I actually needed in the 10th frame, for me, it was all about all I can do is make the best shot. If it strikes, it's meant to be. And after I struck, it kind of gave me that mindset of I'm winning, because I felt like it was just my time. And I think that gave me that extra boost of confidence for the final match to just really, really fight and feel like it was mine. And, you know, it just felt like I'd locked it in at that point.
Confidence seems to be one of the most important things in bowling. Just for an example, even you're talking earlier about making choices, making educated choices. But if you don't have confidence in those choices, I know for me personally, if I don't have confidence in that move I'm making and saying, this is going to work, I'll try to self-correct or I'll try to help it or I'll try to do something else because I'm not sure if this is going to work.
Yeah, 100%. It's all about what you say to yourself and your self-confidence, right? If I step up on the approach and I say, I'm going to miss this 10 pin, what do you think is going to happen? Mm. Right? And that's just all confidence. And one of the things that I try and teach people as well is that you have to find a way to give yourself extra confidence because nobody can give it to you. And that's something that it took me a long time to realize that when I was a child growing up, I really struggled. You know, I've bowled since I was five, but I struggled with winning. I struggled with actually having some success. And all I felt like I was doing was watching people around me have success. And to me, that knocked my confidence. And I never worked on finding a way to actually get that confidence back. And it hasn't been until probably the last 3 or 4 years to where I've really understood that I'm the one that is going to create my confidence, right? People can tell me as many times as they want, Verity, you're great. Verity, you're great. Verity, you're going to win. Verity, you just have to be patient. But hearing it from them, it's great. Okay. It's great to hear that you're a good bowler. But until I truly believe it, it's not going to make any difference.
So I know there's been plenty of times where I have talked myself out of making a good shot, making a 10 pin. How do you overcome that?
That was one of my biggest evaluations or one of my biggest points from my tour last year that I needed to work on spares. But for me, my spares were all mental, right? I knew that if I was stood in the right place, I knew I was going to make it. But I was standing up on the approach and I'm having so much doubt in my mind. And then you miss one. And then, of course, it's like this domino effect to where you miss more because you're thinking so much about the one that you've missed. So I tried by myself a lot to work on it, right? I'm like stood up on the approach. I tell myself I'm going to miss it. And I'm like, no, you're not going to miss it. You're going to make it. Verity, you've got this. And that was my way to try and fix things. But that actually didn't work. And one of the things that I discussed with my sports psychologist was by doing that, I am putting more emphasis on the negative thought. And she gave me a really good explanation to where the more that you think about things, the more focus you put on them, which makes a lot of sense. So I was focusing so much on the missed spare or the negative thought about missing the spare that I would end up missing more spares. So what I have ended up doing is once I have that negative thought, I just acknowledge it and I move on. So instead of trying to combat it with a positive thought, I just say, okay, thanks, brain. And that's it. And I have something called a caveman brain, to where it's kind of like, you know, when the devils are on the shoulder and you have the angel and you have the devil. Well, that devil is my caveman brain. And the way that I've worked with the sports psychologist is that everyone has this caveman brain. Caveman brain comes from way back when in the day, when the caveman brain would tell you to move out of the way so the bear doesn't eat you. Well, that's somewhat a good thing, right? If I'm crossing the road and it's green, but a car starts to come and the car's not stopping, well, you need those thoughts to tell you to stop. So there's certain times where it's just the body's natural response. But clearly that brain is telling me I'm going to miss the 10 pin. So instead of saying, no, I'm going to make it, now I just say, thanks, caveman brain. Like, nice, glad to see you. Thanks for being here. And that's it. And for me, that's made such a huge difference. And what I found is I've actually had less of those negative thoughts since I've paid less attention to it. Now, you know, even if I miss one, I'm still going to have those thoughts of, oh, you're an idiot. Again, shouldn't have those thoughts, but they happen. It's natural. But instead of, you know, really thinking about that and telling myself, no, you're not an idiot, you're not an idiot, you're not an idiot. I'm just like, okay, whatever. Thought is done and move on.
You mentioned earlier about having a sports psychologist that you work with. Can you recommend any other mental game resources that you found valuable?
So I think books are the best way to start getting involved. When I was younger, I worked with a sports psychologist and I didn't really truly appreciate the value of working with him. When I was 16, I'm like, why am I doing this? You know, this isn't helping. And I think since then, books have been the one thing that have started to open my mind to the possibility of needing to work on the mental game. Back then, I didn't truly believe in it. Now, 100% I do. And I think a lot of that comes from the reading material that is out there. And I think that anyone who is starting to get involved, whether it be a podcast or a book, I think that's the best way to start to learn and start to figure out different techniques that you can use whilst figuring out what do you need, right? I might have confidence and somebody else might have confidence, but in order to get that confidence, they have to be done in different ways, depending on how you are as a person. Different techniques are going to work differently for everybody.
So one of my favorite mental resources is a book called With Winning in Mind by Lanny Basham. And in that book, he discusses that you can't have a positive thought and a negative thought simultaneously. And you mentioned the caveman brain earlier. When you're up on the approach and you have those caveman brain thoughts, do you step off the approach and start your pre-shot routine over again? Or do you just acknowledge it and move forward?
Firstly, love that book. It's actually my favorite mental game book that I will recommend to everyone. It's the only one that I have read a few times, because sometimes, you know, you read one, you're like, eh, it was okay. But that's by all time my favorite. So it depends, right? Sometimes if I have that negative thought, I will step off and I will redo my pre-shot routine. And other times, if I have that thought that I feel like I can just acknowledge it and move on, then I won't necessarily step off the approach. But if I've been stood on the approach for way too long, then 100% I step off. And it's one thing that I would recommend to a lot of people is if you're taking too much time, if you're having a bunch of thoughts that aren't going to help you, or if you haven't done your pre-shot routine at all, then I always think you have to step off the approach and reset and make sure you go through that pre-shot routine.
How important do you think the pre-shot routine is, or having a pre-shot routine?
Very. And I think it's very underrated, actually. A lot of people don't do one, don't have one, couldn't even say what one is. But I think that routine is very important to get you prepared. And I say this to a lot of people who have problems with focusing, right? A lot of people are a bit overactive, right? And it's hard to focus on what's in front of you. Well, I think that pre-shot routine is the perfect way to get yourself ready to step up on the approach and bowl. Right? Versus you're back in the concourse, you're speaking with your league pals or whatever it is. Well, how do you then separate having fun with your friends to now I need to get up and make a really good shot? That pre-shot routine for me fits right in there to find you or find a way to put you in the present moment so that you can focus on the shot you're about to make.
In another chapter of the book, with winning in mind, he references that it's important to occupy your conscious mind so that your subconscious mind can do the work. And there's different techniques of doing that. How do you occupy your conscious mind?
I actually don't know.
When you step up on the approach, you're about to make a shot. Does your mind go blank? Are you able to do that? And just...
I wish. No. For me, whilst I do my pre-shot routine, I feel like I also have I have a mental routine that I go through. And that mental routine, because I normally have so many negative thoughts, that mental routine also gets me ready. So they go hand in hand with one another. Normally it's a positive statement that I tell myself, or it might be something that I'm really focused on. So this year at every event, I have had a value goal that I have been able to bring with me throughout the blocks. And it might be as simple as just reminding myself as that value goal. It might be as simple as just telling myself that I am great, but then I will do that mental routine the same way, just like the pre-shot routine every time. And that allows me, it's more about being in the present moment, because if you throw a shot that's really bad, it's okay. You shake it off, but how do you then step up on the approach the next time and forget about that bad shot that you've just had? And that's where those routines come into play so that I can be so focused on the present moment and not worried about the bad shot that happened the frame before.
I'd like to go back and talk about confidence a little bit more, because I think that's a very important part of any great performance. Where do you derive your confidence from so that when you arrive to a tournament that you can have a great performance?
It's hard, right? Because we're always going to beat ourselves up. And we're always going to think that other people are better than us. Even if you're at the top of the game and you're the best in the world, there's always people working to beat you. And a lot of the times you'll find that when you're at the top of your game, that's actually when you question yourself more. For me, it's been about visualization. That's been the biggest thing that has helped me with my confidence. It's something that, you know, I've always felt like I've had a lack of confidence. And it's been something I've struggled to find things that help, right? As much as it's like I said before about people can tell me that I'm great, but it didn't help. It literally made no difference if my coach said, Verity, it's okay. You're a great bowler. You're going to be okay. Like, it meant nothing to me. And it's bad to say that, because I still appreciate them giving me that support. And it's amazing that they have confidence in me, but finding the confidence in myself has been one of the biggest struggles. And visualization has been the one thing that's helped me. And the reason for that is I could never imagine myself winning. And I think that gave me a knock in confidence, because I wasn't confident when I walked in the bowling center that I was going to win the event. I could believe that I was going to make the cut, but I wouldn't believe that I'm going to win the event. I could never imagine myself holding the trophy or anything like that. So of course that gives a knock in confidence. And then you have a bad event, or I have an event that's great and I finish second, but now I'm thinking, well, why can't I win? And then that knocks the confidence again. So visualization for me has been a way for me to believe that I'm actually good, because in my mind, I can envision that I have performed well, whether it be that I've won, whatever it is, whether I have come back from that adversity, I've been able to visualize it in my mind. And from that, I actually feel like I've got confidence. I feel like imagining myself, you know, pick up 110 pins in a row or whatever it is that I really want to achieve, by seeing myself do that in my mind, it's like my mind doesn't know the difference between what is real and what's imagined. So then when I walk in the bowling center, it's like it's already happened. And that's kind of how I felt after I won that second time. It's like everyone said, oh, how does it feel? Blah, blah, blah. And well, it just felt natural. And it felt like it had already happened before. And I think that's because I had the confidence from the visualization that I could do it, and that I'd actually seen myself do it before.
What do you think most bowlers from a variety of skill level get wrong about bowling, or that they misunderstand about bowling?
I think there's a couple of answers to that. I think one of them would be keeping it simple, kind of like we spoke about before. And I think it covers so many different areas. But I think one of the main areas that I see people struggle with the most is spare shooting, right? Everyone's like, it's the dreaded 10 pin, it's the dreaded 7 pin. And I think that's something that a lot of people make a lot harder than it actually is. And I would say the other thing is controlling the bowling ball. So from a physical standpoint, we've got 14, 15 or 16 pound object in our hand. And the more that we control it, the less control we end up actually having of the bowling ball, right? It's like the people who, okay, I want to launch it down the lane and I want to throw it really hard. Well, all of that effort then comes so much from the upper body that you lose control of where that ball is going to go on the lane. You lose the leverage and you're probably going to lose the rev rate. So I think that those are two misconceptions about bowling that maybe people know. I don't know, but that's something that I see a lot.
You have to travel quite a bit, and I'm sure you've had a lot of interesting experiences. I was wondering if you could offer some advice for those who are flying or traveling with equipment.
I would love to say don't travel with equipment, because it's an absolute pain. Personally, I hate traveling with bowling balls. But I do think something that a lot of people don't always think about is keeping your accessories and your shoes and at least a spare jersey with you. So if you're traveling with bowling balls, if you have an interchangeable thumb, I think that you should always keep that interchangeable thumb with you in your backpack. And the same goes for your shoes and any accessories that you really love. So for me, my finger tape can't leave my side, because I could get to a location and my balls might not arrive. If my balls don't arrive, I would obviously, you're going to freak out regardless. But as long as I have my bowling shoes and I have my accessories, there's a chance I could drill a bowling ball. And that bowling ball is still going to feel good because I have my thumb. I don't have to get a pro shop to drill another thumb for me. So that is a big one. And then the reason I say a jersey is some people might take a carry-on with them, with their clothes, depending on how many balls that you're allowed. But if you check your clothes to where they, you know, go underneath the plane, if that clothes bag doesn't arrive and you're expected to bowl as soon as you've landed, whether that be a practice session or something, it's always worth making sure that you have an outfit that you can bowl in. And I say that, I don't always do this. I probably should take my own travel advice, because sometimes, you know, things happen and things don't arrive. One of the biggest benefits that I've actually had this year is having an AirTag. So I have an AirTag that I have in my bowling bag, and I have a few. So I have one in my passport, one in my backpack. But if you are traveling and you are really concerned about that, it's worth having, because it can take a little bit of stress off you as a person, right? Thinking, oh my God, is my bag on the plane? Is my bag going to make it? And you have a connecting flight. Okay, well, did my bag get put on the plane? by having that air tag, you're actually able to track things, and then it can take your mind off, you know, just losing things.
So last two questions. First is, who has been your greatest teacher?
Life. Yeah, so I wouldn't pick a person. Obviously, I could pick a person, but I think that life is the greatest teacher. I think I've learned the most from life than I have from a specific human being.
I guess nothing teaches you more than going through the ups and downs of life.
Yeah, 100%. It's all about experience, right? And people come and go within that. And I've had a lot of mentors along the way that have definitely helped mold me into who I am today. But all of that then comes together. And that's where I think that life is the greatest teacher.
So very last question. What is a question that I should have asked you that I did not?
Something that I probably don't get asked very much would be either what has been my biggest sacrifice or what have I had to sacrifice in order to get to where I am today?
So what has been your sacrifice?
I think for me, it's family, right? So I moved to the US back in 2012 to study at university. I'm from the UK and I moved to the US. So those 3,000-4,000 miles of being away from home for me is my sacrifice. And it's the one thing that I struggle with day in and day out is I choose to be in the US because that's where the bigger opportunities for bowling are. But then it means that I don't get to see my family.
So. Wait, you're from the UK? I would not have
picked
that from your
accent. Australian, right?
Yeah.
Or born and raised in Alabama.
Can you do a good Southern accent?
No, I can do a California girl and I'm not going to do it.
Oh, come on now.
maybe if you have me back on your podcast.
Okay. We'll save that for next time. Well, Verity, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show today. Thank you so much for being here and for sharing all your knowledge with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was good. Thanks for touching on the side of the sport that I think is important, but it's not always talked about enough.
Absolutely, you bet. Thanks for listening. Join us next time on The Bowler's Mind.